Grace to you and welcome to the DDP for the 11th of September. I'm your host, Paul White. I want to say happy birthday to my dad today. Pops listens in on the podcast. I don't know if he catches it in real time or daily, but he does catch up. So happy birthday to Dad. I appreciate who you are and what you have done to make me who I am. And I always honor the fact that I think, without a doubt, I am at least, I don't know if I'm in ministry because of my dad, but I'm definitely highly influenced by what I saw in him, a man who was and is for real in what he stands for and what he believes. And so I appreciate Dad so much. Happy birthday, Dad. Okay, we are in the 8th chapter of 1 Corinthians concerning things offered to idols. Paul says, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, love edifies. We showed the contrast yesterday between a knowledge that one might have about something versus the love they have towards to someone near them, and how those two things should go hand in hand. You should have knowledge of your own liberty and your own place in the world and your own conscience, but still be able to love and edify others. And that if you only look at this journey as the acquisition of knowledge, it seems that you will leave loving others out. So Paul's contrast seems to be knowledge is good for you, while love is good for your neighbor. So if your knowledge neglects your neighbor, this is that, and that I think this is another way of saying, don't neglect your responsibility while upholding your rights. So don't tout your liberty to the point that you forget to love your neighbor. Think if rights and responsibilities go together, liberty and love seem to go together. So if you know, we're dealing with an issue that apparently the Corinthian church had written to Paul about because of the way he phrases this. Now, concerning things offered to idols, it would seem that Corinth must have asked Paul in a previous letter, what about things offered to idols? This is a different sort of argument for us. We don't see this, but let's try and reconstruct it if we could. The Corinthian church is dwelling in a quite secular city named Corinth. It is Greek. It is full of temples to other gods. There are other religions rampant. When you think church, don't think building on the corner with a sign out front inviting people in. That's not the first century church. It's not that public. Christianity was looked down upon. It was a group of outsiders. They were not popular. I want to do some studies here on the podcast very soon on, and I'm just kind of waiting for the right moment in this Corinthian study to do it, about how the church was viewed within the Roman Empire, particularly right up into the reign of Nero, because Nero is the emperor that starts to oversee the suppression of the Judean revolt. The Judea revolts against the Roman rule in the late 60s. Nero is Caesar. And that leads to the fall of the temple. That's a long journey, about a 3.5 to 4 year journey, that will ultimately end in the destruction of Temple Judaism and for the most part, be the end of Jerusalem as they knew it. Now, it doesn't mean the city didn't end, but of course, you understand. I want to get into how the church was viewed, because it wasn't good, and there was this prevailing idea that Christianity was kind of a poison. The Corinthian church is not meeting in a brick-and-mortar building on the corner. They're an underground unit. When they meet wherever they can, when they can, like a band of vagabonds. The external religions of Corinth are all going to be secular. And in those secular temples, they offer meat, lamb, bull, goat, just like Judaism. They offer meat on altars to gods. They then take that meat into the marketplace, because when Jews offered meat on the altar at the temple, the meat was taken by the priesthood. The family of Levi did not have a natural inheritance, and therefore they were provided for by temple sacrifice. I've wondered, did that become a sore spot for Jews? I know I'm wandering here, but when we think about it, whenever they had their possession in the land, the priestly tribe got the tithe, and they got the food off the altar. And there was all kinds of offerings, meal offerings and meat offerings and offerings with oil in it. So they all got the supplies they needed through people sacrificing. And I think probably in the early stages, everybody was cool with it because, you know, you got your property, they got their stuff. What happened whenever Israel lost the land but had to maintain the temple, and then the priesthood keeps getting their share while the average Israelite has nothing? The average Jew. There was no Israelite because there's no Israel as a country. I don't know. I've wondered, do you think that maybe the average person in Israel had become resentful of the priesthood because of that? That's a side note. I don't even know why I'm on that. That's just kind of me rambling on into that. But it is worth thinking about. How would the priesthood have been viewed, say, in the time of Christ, in the time of Paul, where there is no, Jews don't have their own land anymore? So that each temple sacrifices, and they in the secular temples, they take that meat off the altar. Now, the priests may have kept some of it, I don't know, but it was common practice to take it into the marketplace and then sell it. And it could be sold at, in some cases, a premium price, because this meat was offered to Zeus, or this meat was offered to Apollo, etc., etc. And Christians were in a theological debate. Are we allowed to buy that meat? Are we allowed to eat it? It's been offered to an idol. Does that make it bad? That's why Paul is addressing this in 1 Corinthians 8. I'll get into the depth of his argument, because he lays out a 3-verse case. But there's some things about knowledge and what you know that I think will be helpful in the peripheral as we journey through this. We'll do this tomorrow. We've laid the case. Now we'll start to dig in. I'll see you tomorrow. God bless.